I'm going to go right to Emily Miller. Right to Emily Miller. Hello, Emily. How are you?
I wasn't expecting you to write to me.
Yes, I have to go right to you because I have so much to talk to you about today. You as an award-winning journalist. First of all, I want to get your comment on Wisconsin. Were you surprised that the win was a big one for Walker?
No, I wasn't surprised. I mean, I expected it to go that way. And, you know, it's just a shame that a seated governor has to run for election twice. I think it's a very good sign, obviously, for the Romney campaign and for anyone else who's running as a Republican this year, because union, you know, stronghold is weakening.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the biggest, you know, lesson we've gotten from this.
Yeah. All right. I want to update one other story that you've done before I get into your piece that's in the Washington Times today. Did you have some new information regarding the Iraqi war vet and his guns?
Yeah, well, part three of the four-part series came out today. And in it, I talk about what happened to him when he was arrested. And as you remember from last week, we discussed this Iraq vet. He spent a year there as a sergeant, got back and, you know, called a counseling crisis hotline to say that he was having trouble sleeping.
Right.
And it, mistakenly, it was a suicide hotline, though not advertised by the VA hospital that way. And then the operator asked if he had guns. He said, honestly, he did, because he lives in D.C. She called 911. And make that part of the story summarized. And the D.C. police completely overreacted, brought in SWAT teams, spent 4 hours organizing a raid on his house, woke him up in the middle of the night and hand-tied him and dragged him out, and there were no charges even filed against him. So that was sort of the first part of the story. And then once they had him out of the house, they raided his house, really ransacked it, and all this for two handguns and a rifle that weren't even close to him, and he definitely wasn't a suicide threat. So this part of the story, part three, is about how they put him in jail, and then they somehow lost him because they did not put his correct name or birth date on his prison ID card. Both were wrong.
Unbelievable.
So he ended up spending 2 weeks in D.C. jail, in Central Jail, in a bad jail, orange jumpsuit and all the whole nine yards. And the first four nights before he even had a hearing, he was interrogated by the police. He was put in jail, and they said the court was closed because of the snowstorm, and never gave him a hearing from Friday until Tuesday. Actually, from Wednesday, and for almost a full week, he was under custody and wasn't given a hearing. And then because he wasn't given a phone call, he was not able to call someone to help get him a lawyer. Meanwhile, his family and friends are trying to find him desperately in camp because it's his wrong name and wrong birth date. So he has to use a public defender, and the public defender doesn't show up for his hearing, his arraignment, and the judge remands him to a halfway house. He gets put back in jail when they tell him there's no more spaces in the halfway house, so he has to go back to Central Jail. So in the end, he spent 2 weeks in prison. And in that period, came out and found his house ransacked, the door unlocked, and a note saying his dog had been taken to animal control and would be euthanized in 3 days. This was 19 days ago. Luckily, his girlfriend, who couldn't track him down in jail, was able to track down his dog, unbelievably, through D.C. bureaucracy and save the dog in time, Matrix. But, you know, it's just this unbelievable story of how D.C. just goes so overreacts for, you know, this law-abiding citizen whose job it is to carry guns to protect us. The military knows he's safe enough to carry guns, put him in jail for 2 weeks for, you know, safely not registering his guns. So, it's gotten a lot of attention, and so this is part three, is up today.
All right. Man, what a crazy story that is. All right, with the remaining time that we have, I want to talk to you about Hate the Rich Hypocrisy. That's your column today. This guy, Obama, has a knack for bashing them during the day and taking their money at night. He's done it time and time again. How does he get away with it?
Well, that's a very good question. I don't have an answer for you how he gets away with it. It is frustrating because he's so wily like that.
Yeah.
But, you know, this is the most unbelievable. He has spent the past, you know, year and a half talking about how horrible hedge fund owners are and how they aren't paying enough taxes and, you know, their secretaries pay more taxes than they do. And then, you know, even recently, he's talking about private equity investors and Bain Capital and how horrible they are for the economy and the government and people, and they don't care about people. And then he goes to New York and has a huge fundraiser hosted by none other than the billionaire hedge fund owner in his fancy Fifth Avenue apartment full of hedge fund owners and private equity investors. And then goes to another huge one, huge fundraiser at the Waldorf Astoria, like completely glamorous, and You know, this one's all the rich. Obviously, the elite could afford a $2,500 ticket, dinner ticket. And, you know, he's been saying for years he's going to raise taxes on those who make over $200,000 a year, which is everyone in that room. But yet, you know, he doesn't mention that in his remarks to them at the fundraiser. But, you know, that's what he's been saying for years. And yet he goes in there and asks them for $2,500 each for his fundraising. It's just unbelievable. And then he goes to Broadway and has all these celebrities, you know, who are millionaire celebrities, you know, singing for him. Brock on Broadway is the name of the show.
Yeah.
Now, it's just really, it's just amazing that he does that. And, you know, as we heard this whole controversy in the past sort of 24 hours, Bill Clinton came out, actually, after being with Obama for those three fundraisers in New York, came out yesterday and said, actually, I think we should extend all the tax rates at the end of the year. I think that would actually be good for the economy and for job creation. Well, Obama, you know, quickly, like, gets in, you know, is, like, angry and the White House goes crazy and Clinton tries to, you know, pull back on his remarks, but it was way too late. So, I mean, it's just so unbelievable. This is a man who wants to raise money on the rich. That's, like, his driving message of this campaign, raise taxes on the rich to pay for his new stimulus spending, which he's going to do. That's his whole plan.
Mm-hmm.
Yet he doesn't want their money until he's taken their money for his reelection campaign.
I know, it's insane. And then you see people like George Clooney, you know, getting together at his home with a bunch of rich people.
Yeah, $15 million they raised.
Yeah, $15 million. Now we got Sarah Jessica Parker. That's coming up next week.
Yes. And actually, Obama just left today for the West Coast. He's going to San Francisco and then L.A. And all they are is big, you know, super rich Silicon Valley and then L.A. celebrity fundraisers.
Mm-hmm.
He's got Air Force One to his, I mean, he got back from New York like after midnight Monday, took Air Force One again on Wednesday. I mean, he's not governing. All he's doing is fundraising, but he's just fundraising from the super wealthy. It's very different than his last campaign, which was, you know, small dollars from a lot of people. This is the rich. And it's just, I can't understand these people who are rich, who know that he wants to take their money and raise their taxes to pay for his stimulus programs, yet he also wants, you know, $40,000 from each of them for the DNC and his campaign. It's just, I can't explain it.
Yeah, I can't either. I can't explain it because, you know, obviously if I was in that group and I was going to be taxed to death and I was bad-mouthed all day long, I'd tell them where to put the $40,000. But that, you know, hey, that's,
I know. I'd be like, I'm going to pay this. You want me to pay this at the end of the year and now? It's just bizarre.
I know. It's crazy. And John Bon Jovi gets a ride on Air Force One, although the White House was quick to say, we made them pay for it. Actually, we paid for it.
No, they didn't say basically the campaign paid for it.
Yeah, that's
and,
right.
And, you know, they've also, like, you know, Susan Crabtree's done those great stories on how exactly the campaign does. We don't know what the campaign pays for as far as Air Force One goes. But at most, it's a first-class ticket for anyone, you know, who's vaguely campaign-related. And, you know, they decide themselves. It's all very secretive. Nobody knows. So basically, John Bon Jovi got a free trip on Air Force One. I mean, that's just the way it went. And, you know, I mean, which is, you know, the president's right to do that, but, like, you know, on the same time, to say that his whole campaign is based on that he cares about the middle class and the working class, and that's what he's, you know, why he needs to be elected and why Mitt Romney doesn't. All Mitt Romney cares about is the rich people. It's just, you know, such hypocrisy, and that was the point of my column today.
Yeah, and, you know, the funny part about that, in and of itself, this week we saw new polling numbers that show Romney now ahead 49-45 with that quote-unquote middle-class voter.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I think people see through this. And, I mean, obviously, the thing that's going to hurt Obama the worst is his record. You know, whatever he says, people look at him this time around, which we didn't have last time around, and say, well, that hasn't worked so far. We still have 8.2% unemployment. We have now CBO's reported we have this debt that's going to create a fiscal crisis. And all this is due to this president, so it is hard to believe anything he says.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy. All right, we are out of time, Emily. We will do it again next week, though.
Okay. Have a good week, Andy.
You too.
Bye.
Take care. Emily Miller, award-winning Emily Miller of the Washington Times. Emily's a senior editor of the opinion pages here at the paper.